This is the MLW Radio Network.
And welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news notes, reviews and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling. Like we announced, we're back already. That's me, your host Strigger, and my co-host, the one and only Dylan from Tennessee. Hey Dylan.
Hey Strigger, it's so great to be back right now. You know, in between this and our last podcast a couple of days ago, I shaved, I got spiffied up for the show. I wanted to take a little more professionally, get some, you know. I actually cut myself a little bit, so I was bleeding earlier, much like some people will be talking about in the near future. But it's great to be back yet again. I'm so happy to deliver this extra show. We were gone for a while, but we're making it up to everybody. We never leave anybody hanging. We're doing another show, and I can't wait to talk about Japanese pro wrestling.
Yeah, always very important to get cleaned up for a podcast like this, you know, get clean shaved, wear a nice shirt, all the stuff that I regularly do for this podcast. So glad that you finally got in line with me here, and we're going to talk some pro wrest here.
Strigger, the thing is, I didn't know what to do with myself without this show. I think that's what it was. So I really let myself go this past month without you.
Oh my god!
But now that we're reunited, I feel like a whole new me. So I'm ready to go.
Did you become un cavernario?
No. but no. Although I will say, I let my beard grow out a lot. My hair was kind of the same as always, but I was cooking out on the grill a lot this past month or so. So I was cooking over an open flame, like a cavernario may do.
Oh my god!
Maybe a little bit of cavernario.
Yeah, that's not bad at all, I guess.
Yep. Guapo cavernario.
Guapo. All right. So let's get into the things we want to talk about on this show here. First of all, couple of days ago, I looked at the blog that I always look at to get the summaries for Katsuyori Shibata's blog updates. And the summary that I was able to translate was that right now Shibata is not continuing his therapy, his electrotherapy that he started right after he left hospital in May. So he feels very stressed right now because of the change of the season, so his body doesn't respond very well to that. Due to frequent changes in the air pressure, temperature, and humidity, he doesn't have this concentration span he feels he needs, and he also is very stressed when he's in crowded places. So he wonders if that's a side effect of his treatment, and so he stopped his treatment that he had for 4 months now since he had left that hospital, but he feels like he needs the balance between his body and his spirit to continue this treatment. So right now he isn't really doing anything to improve his body situation because he feels like he was trying too hard to get back to his normal self, quote unquote, I guess. So And he came to the conclusion that his body won't heal up quickly, and he doesn't know how much his condition will improve, actually. But he closed with that sentence that he will adjust his personal circumstances. So I hope this little update I was able to give destroys these rumors that we talked about in our last show when we talked about the Tokyo Dome show for New Japan.
Yeah, and he's doing a very brave thing to take a step back. That's something that's very hard because I know in his heart that he's pushing for, that he wants to be back to how he used to be.
Yeah.
But sometimes you just gotta pull back a little bit and, you know, give yourself a break a little bit. And I hope that's what he's doing. And, you know, I'm always on his side. I'm always praying for him. And hopefully his spirit and his body can both get back to where he wants them to be. I think that's the most important thing right now. The rumors are the rumors.
Yeah.
But really, his spirit and his body, that's what he needs to focus on right now. And not, you know, take baby steps, you know. Nobody says, even if he desperately wants to come back, there's nobody says he has to do it now. He needs to just focus on himself and his body. And like he said, I think he's got a good head on his shoulders. He did something very brave, because that's something, especially as an athlete, when you almost have an invincibility complex about you already, to take a step back and admit, hey, this isn't working, I've got to change it up, is a very brave thing on his part. So I'm really impressed with that in his mindset, really.
Yeah, I think that's a great point you just brought up there, especially in sports. That's a big issue, I guess, when you have injuries, but especially in a sport like pro wrestling, where you're portrayed to be this invincible human, as you just mentioned. Especially,
yeah, like a superhero.
Yeah, especially, you know, in Shibata's case, you know, he was just this tough motherfucker who just beat people up, and he's not able to provide that right now, and that hurts him very much. But great that he is apparently finding his peace with the situation he's in. So I will try to give further updates on Shibata if I get them, and then if I have the time to translate these blog summaries that I get. So hoping for the best here for Katsuyori Shibata. Another injury we have to get into is Yuji Okabayashi. The injury he has is, I think, a shoulder dislocation. And Dylan, you watched the Securitactic Finals. Did you see the moment when it happened?
Let me see here. I didn't. I don't think I saw the
match. So he was having this match with Shingo Takagi against Yenki Nicho Kenju. And Yuko Miyamoto came springboarding, did a handspring into the ropes, sorry. Not a springboard, did a handspring into the ropes and came bouncing back, and Okabayashi tried to catch him onto his shoulders for an Argentine backbreaker. And during that move, Miyamoto slipped from Okabayashi's shoulders and tried to hold on to Okabayashi's arm. Oh. And in that very moment, you could see that his shoulder popped, and when that happened, he wasn't able to continue the match anymore. Yeah. So that happened on October 15 at the Psychotactic Finals. And Okabayashi was also scheduled to participate in the Global Global League for NOAH. So he's out now, and they haven't found a replacement, so all his opponents are getting 2 points without competing in a match. And that's pretty bad right now, because Okabayashi was brought in to be this big outsider, and NOAH really needs some fresh heavyweights right now, because basically this year they have run through all of their big heavyweight matches they have, and they haven't really, these matches that they had haven't really caught on. They haven't really caught fire. The promotion is kind of in deep waters right now. But Dylan, you actually watched the first Global League show. What did you think about that show?
Yeah, that's true. I did watch the first Global League show, and I thought, like most of their other shows, it was very easy to watch up and down. There was nothing really bad. Even on the undercard before the tournament matches, you had stuff like there was an Atomico's match with Kumano, the 50 Funky Powers and Yoshinari Ogawa versus Double X team of Hiroki and Taiji Ishimori and Maybach and Leona. And of course, the best part of that was Leona taking the fall.
Ah, come on.
Not Kumano. I loved it. I actually, to be honest with you, I said this, I forget who I was telling this to, but Leona in his Noah appearances hasn't really looked that bad, actually. He's everybody just talks about him like he's really terrible, but he's really done okay.
You know, he used to be pretty terrible when he started, and for the first
he was really bad.
2 years of his career, because he only had like 5-6 matches a year. But now he's trying to get more exposure. Then Noah is helping him pretty much to get this exposure, and he's not good, but he's not awful.
No. It's just a shame, because even in that match, the match with Fujinami that they had, that crazy match on that crazy card, Leona took the fall, and Fujinami just stared at him from the apron in disappointment. Yes. and didn't even break up the pin.
That was an amazing visual.
Yeah, I feel for Leona, but so that was actually a pretty good match. Then we got to the tournament matches, and you know, you got some questionable matches on paper, mm-hmm. like Mitsuya Nagai versus Cody Hall, but they had a concise little match. Nothing wrong with it. You know, it just let Nagai win with his diving head deal, and it was just a little solid little match. Saito and Tanaka, same thing. Good match. Nothing wrong with it. Tanaka gets the win with a sliding D. And then you had the big matches on the show. Oh, also there was the Ratels versus Ratels match. Yeah, let's not forget that. Where you had Harada and Tadasuke teaming with Kitamiya, and Hayata and Yohei teaming with Kotoge. And that was a solid match too. That was actually a pretty good match. So
they are having this Ratels feud because they are fighting over both junior belts right now.
Yeah, exactly. Ratels has all the junior belts right now. Yohei called Tadasuke the mom of the group at one point in his promo, which was very funny. He called Harada the boss and Tadasuke the mom in his promo. So I love that. But then you got the big matches on the show, which I think both matches are well worth watching if you know these guys and are a fan. The first was Nakajima versus Kenno, and they had a match in January that was it was right around the time Noah the Reborn first kind of kicked off, mm-hmm. and everyone liked that, but me, I didn't. That match left me kind of cold a little bit, because they both kind of come across as stoic guys who kick hard, but this match I thought was a lot better than that, especially with how it ended up playing out. They went to a time limit draw, just to spoiler alert there, but that was something that really, they didn't even tease throughout. It was a really organic and good match that they had, with great exchanges between both men. Both men really tried hard. You could tell that they wanted to have a great match. And the main event was Marufuji versus Go, and that was a very solid match too. So, not as good. I think Nakajima and Kenno, everybody should check out and give a chance to. And Marufuji versus Go was a good match too, but there was nothing bad on this show. And like most Noah shows, it was one of the easiest shows to watch up and down, because a lot of shows, it's kind of a struggle to watch the undercard. But here, you had a lot of good stuff. So I always appreciate that from Noah. And we saw it again with this Global League show. It's just a shame Okabayashi got injured.
Exactly.
They really could have used them.
Yes.
But they do have some replacements coming, not for the tournament, but for Noah. They're going to, Sekimoto and Nomura are going to work some shows.
Exactly.
In November. So that's all right. That's pretty good. Hopefully they can wrestle a lot more for Noah in the future.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to watching this show, because these Noah Kurken Hall shows, they always are pretty easy to watch, as you mentioned. And the tournament we have right now here, there are two blocks. Block A has Masaki Tamiya, Mohamed Yone, Naomi Chimaru Fuji, Goshi Ozaki, Maybach Taniguchi, Mitsuya Nagai from Tradition, promotion of Tatsumi Fujinami, and Cody Hall. And Yuji Okabayashi obviously being out, so he is at the bottom of this block. And then we have 8 people in block B. Atsushi Kotoge, Masato Tanaka, Kenno, Katsuhiko Nakajima, Kazuma Sakamoto, Akitoshi Saito, Quiet Storm, and Yuko Miyamoto. And you mentioned Daisuke Sakimoto coming in. He is actually coming in with his tag team partner and his adopted son, I guess, Takuya Nomura, and they are having a match against Naomi Chimaru Fuji and Takashi Sugiura on November 11, because Takashi Sugiura is returning from his medical procedure. He had a heart disease.
And that was very scary.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's having a series of return matches here. A couple of them against lower-ranked Noah guys. A couple of them with higher-ranked Noah guys. And also with Daisuke Sakimoto and Takuya Nomura coming in here. And this Global League is running all the way through November 19 with the finals in Curricon Hall. And at that show, we also have a junior heavyweight title match between the boss of Rattles, Daisuke Harada, and the mom of Rattles, Tadasuke.
Yes. I love Tadasuke. He's had a really good year. All of the Rattles guys have. But Tadasuke, I can definitely see why they called him the mom. If you look at his look. He has very, very chubby cheeks. And I can relate to that in many ways. But the dude's a great wrestler, whatever you want to call him. And I really love all those guys. They're doing some good work for Noah this year.
Yes, they are doing good work. And I really want to don't want to emphasize it too much, but the numbers they are doing recently aren't that good, actually. So that's what I was talking when I was saying that they didn't necessarily caught fire with what they did over the course of the last couple of months. Their Yokohama show apparently did pretty good for what they draw recently, but hopefully they will do better next year.
Yeah. It's going to be a long road, so to speak. And the good thing is about it is, forget the numbers, but when you watch the shows, the crowds are all excited to be there.
Yes.
And they add something to the show. So that's what I like to see most of all. The numbers are what they are, and they are not good for the most part, but haven't been all year. And hopefully they can take a step forward with this Global League. You've got Sugiura coming back. You've got the Big Japan guys coming in. So I think there is reason for somewhat optimism, but just like I said, more like baby steps going forward. If you could take a little bit of step forward each month, that would be a great thing for them. But I don't have great expectations or anything like that. It's just more, maybe if they do everything right now, in a year's time, we could talk about them in a more positive sense.
Yeah. Very much reminds me of the talk we had about All Japan Pro Wrestling at the end of 2015.
Yep.
And wasn't really like everybody expected Kento Miyahara to go on this monster title reign and bring all the fans back that left because mm-hmm. All Japan was dying in chaos, so to speak. And people didn't really expect that, so maybe there's something that Noah unfolds to get back the attention of the people.
Yeah.
So, it was your Noah report, then we both of us watched a show, and we already talked about some of the Big Japan guys here earlier on. Yuji Kobayashi, Daisuke Sakimoto, and Takuya Nomura. We talked about them on this show, and we talked about them on the show we did a couple of days ago. And on October 15, Big Japan Pro Wrestling had their finals of the Psycho Tag League 2017, and I really like this Psycho Tag League moniker because Google Translate always is very fun with that. Sometimes this Psycho Tag League is translated to be the most futuristic tag league, and sometimes it's just the Big Dipper Tag League, which always brings me to the point that I really want Scott Steiner in this Big Dipper Tag League, so we can show off his Big Dipper. But yeah, so in this Psycho Tag League, Big Japan always divides the two blocks into a strong block and into a deathmatch block. And the two best teams of each block face in the semifinals. So we had here on this October 15 show in Curricon Hall, which drew a sold-out house of 1,427 people. In the first match, the Strong Block semifinals, with the team of Okami, Daiichi Hashimoto, and Hideyoshi Kamitani defeating Daisuke Sekimoto and Kohei Sato. Dylan, I really, really liked this match, and I thought especially Daiichi Hashimoto looked very strong in this match, and I think you can really see that Big Japan wants this man to succeed and wants this man to become a huge star for them. They want this man to become a star that can carry the promotion, and Daisuke Sakimoto especially is someone who is advocating for this very, very hard. Remembering back to the strong climb, I think last year when Daisuke Sakimoto took the pinfall in a singles match against Daichi Hashimoto after this rising DDT finish that Daichi has. And in similar fashion, Daichi Hashimoto was able to defeat Daisuke Sakimoto in this match here after around 13 minutes. Really enjoyed this match.
I honestly thought this was one of Daichi's best performances in Big Japan. You know, I thought the Okami, they showed such a great fire attacking them before the bell. And they attacked, and they acted like, they wrestled like they were hardened veterans, you know what I'm saying? And I thought that was great. But Sakimoto is also great in his role. He's got so many roles he can play in this company. He's often put over as one of the aces. We saw it earlier in the year in his tag team with Okabayashi, where he got busted open. He had such great fire to that. But then you can see here, he can also play more of like a bullying kind of role that's testing Daichi and people like that. But Daichi had a lot of fighting spirit that he had, and I thought he did a great job. Kamatani, he did a great job too. I was impressed with both members of Okami in this match.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought really all four men, they played a great match in terms of the emotion involved that they showed, especially Okami. But all of that ended up paying off for the young team. I was a little surprised because after he hit the big brainbuster DDT for the win, I was very surprised by that. It was a very clean win, and I thought they did the veterans did an excellent job putting over the young guys, and Okami did a great job in their role. So I think everybody really deserves credit in that match.
Oh yeah, definitely. We're going to talk about Hideyoshi Kamitani in a bit here. First of all, we had the second semifinals here, the finals of the deathmatch block, where the current reigning BJW Tag Team Champions Abdullah Kobayashi and Ryuji Ito were able to defeat the third generation Shimidoro brothers that are Masaya Takahashi and Takayuki Ueki in 11 minutes. Also enjoyed this match. There was this one great visual when Takahashi and Ueki were throwing light tube bundles at Abdullah Kobayashi, and he was just standing there and just taking the pain, turning around and hitting both guys with a lariat, and the place went apeshit for that. So that was amazing. Very enjoyable deathmatch here as well. Like the team of Kobayashi and Ito very much.
Yeah, they did a great job. Thankfully, in the rules of a death match here, and all the guys did good. The Blood Brothers, they work really together, really well together. And to me, Takahashi has all the makings of a top death match star, and we've seen it with his title reign and everything like that. I just think these guys had a really enjoyable death match. You really said it yourself. Okabayashi, I apologize. Kobayashi.
Yes.
He's so enjoyable as a tank, you know, in these death matches. Like you said, that's almost, some guys, like you said, Sekimoto earlier, or Okabayashi, who I've got on the brain right now, those guys are like missiles, and they just cause destruction wherever we go. Kobayashi's almost like an indestructible blob of force that he has, you know. He could take all sorts of damage and keep coming at you. He's unstoppable. So I think that's a great thing. And I also think he has a great dynamic with Ito, who's a longtime deathmatch ace for the company. So I really liked the match too. It was a good deathmatch. Didn't go too long. It was only about 10 minutes or so. Everybody did good in this match. Exactly. I also like the finish of Kobayashi winning with the crab on Ueki as well. That was a good finish.
Yeah, Abdullah Kobayashi, I think 1 or 2 years ago, added this this Boston crab as his finish, and he frequently uses it in death matches when he, for example, has his opponent in thumbtacks, like he had here with Ueki. Ueki lying in thumbtacks and Kobayashi doing the crab hold, so his opponent basically has to give it up. So that's,
it's such a believable story.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Keep it simple. Keep it simple.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the rest of the card were most six-man tag matches and tag team matches. The one match we already talked about was Isami Kodaka and Yuka Miyamoto against Shingo Takagi and Yuji Okabayashi. And I just want to point out how much I enjoy Shingo Takagi outside of Dragon Gate. Inside of Dragon Gate, of course, he is inside of this Dragon Gate universe where they do these crazy six-man tags and all that kind of stuff. But when he's outside of Dragon Gate, especially in a promotion that has guys similar to his size and body type, he really thrives.
Yeah, he's been such a great performer in this tournament. We had that tag match that everyone raved about early on, that many people were saying is a match of the year candidate. And Takagi was a big part of that. He's a big part of all of his matches. He's impressed in literally all of the matches I've seen of him in Big Japan thus far. And he's someone that really fits right in, you know, this style. There was no real adjustment period needed for him. He just came in there like a true professional. And even in Dragon Gate, he became probably one of the highlights of that promotion whenever I would watch both his character work and his in-ring. I think he's really progressed in great ways. And here he's playing a totally different role than he does in Dragon Gate, because in Dragon Gate he's the main heel, sort of. And here it's more like he's trying to prove himself that he's on the level of these badasses of Big Japan. And he's done a great job. He definitely proved that in this tournament. And after the match, I know he was calling for a rematch against Yankee Nichukinju.
Oh, yeah.
So I hope one day we get that rematch with Takagi versus Takagi and whoever it may be if Okabayashi remains injured for a while.
Exactly. So very fun match here, as well as Hideki Suzuki going into the six-man tag match here with Katsumi Kikuta and Yoshihisa Uto against Ryota Hama, Shogun Okamoto, and Yasufumi Nakanoe. And what really stood out to me here was that Yoshihisa Uto was able to get the pinfall over Shogun Okamoto here.
Yeah, Uto's got a great future. I said it at the end of the show on after the July show, the big show of the year, that I think they should build to Uto getting a title shot at the next big show, because Big Japan years kind of, it almost plays out in chapters, sort of, like with Okabayashi taking the mantle, then Kamatani taking the mantle, and this year Suzuki actually retained the title. So I think if they have a new chapter, I would like to see Uto get brought up to that level, and I think he's got a big shot of it, and he's doing a lot of good work right now. That was a very quick match, but it was very good for what they had.
Yeah, they had a stacked card with the 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 matches here, and yep. Another very short match was the prelude to the deathmatch title match that Masashi Takeda and Minoru Fujita are having on November 1st, so a couple of days after this show he drops. And really enjoyable match in the semi-main event, Dylan, with Kota Sekifuda, Shinobu, and Tatsuhiko Yoshino defeating Katsuki Hashimoto, Takuya Nomura, and Yuya Aoki. Basically the entire Big Japan Junior Division in this match here went like 13 minutes, and it was Yoshino who was able to defeat Takuya Nomura following the athlete German suplex hold.
And it was a beautiful thing. I love Yoshino, man. Even when he was doing that dumb comedy character in Big Japan, no matter what you stick him with, whether he's comedy or serious wrestler, he does a great job.
Yeah.
And I would love to see him, even though he's kind of he was on Shinobu's team here, it wasn't so much to build him up. I was happy to see him get the pin. I was actually really surprised. I thought Shinobu or, you know, one of the challengers would get a win over Shinobu to set up a title match. But Yoshino getting it was awesome. And it's big that he beat Nomura, too. I think that's really cool. And I would love to see them have a prolonged singles match at some point.
Well, they have already set up a title match, because if you remember back to the... if you go back to the September Kuroken Hall show, since September, yeah, they've been building up Yuya Aoki very strong. Very strong.
Yeah, and I thought Aoki would get the win here over someone to set up the title. Yeah,
well, he already did get the win over Shinobu at the September Kuroken Hall show, so that's why they had this match here. And now they are doing the title match in November. We're going to talk about that card in a bit. Yeah, just like they elevated Yoshihisa Uto, they also are elevating Yuya Oki right now. So that's pretty great here. And then we have the finals of the Psycho Tag League 2017. It was a hardcore match. And Dylan, to be honest, this match was good, but I thought the two semifinals were better.
Yeah, I especially like the first one with Sekimoto and Sato because I think it told a cohesive story. Especially, I want to say in this match, Kamatani got brutalized in this match because he got busted open with this chair shot with the end of the chair that Ito just totally nailed him with. And it was so like, it was such a dick move how he did it. It was like he just bopped him right in the face. And it was bad. He got murdered with chair shots to the back that bent the chair, broke it. Then he slammed him down on the broken chairs, and Ito held up the chair that he's like, I fixed it. And I was like, oh, poor Kamatani. And a lot of the match, too, they kind of teased that Daichi was kind of standing around out on the outside, too, when they were brawling. They had kind of like a stare down while Kamatani was getting murdered on the outside. Daichi ended up getting carved up by a Kobayashi spike here, which was just gruesome. Everyone was bloodied, pretty much. Ito nailed him with the kendo stick, and then Kamatani finally got this hot tag, and I think a reason why maybe this didn't go as well as we had thought, he had the most basic run of offense ever with his hot tag.
Yeah.
And it led to a stretch plum to set up the near tap. And Kamatani finally got a hold of the chair and looked like he was about to deal a receipt to somebody, but Kobayashi just ran him over, took away the chair, and it was not good. We saw Kobayashi's ugly New Japan tribute offense with the Sling Blade and the Rainmaker that Kamatani just didn't even take a bump for on the Rainmaker. It ended up setting up Okami using the leg sweep and the lariat combo, and Daichi does the leg sweep really good. That was a move I like to use too, so I like that he did it. He does it really well, and he ended up taking the deathmatch guys out. Kamatani scored the pin with a backdrop that got about 2 inches off the air, I think, on Kobayashi. Understandable, though.
Yes, because Kobayashi is just with this 140 kilo guy.
Yeah.
That's pretty hard to get into the air.
He tried his best with the back.
So the match itself, it had a long period of when Kamitani and Hashimoto were held down by the deathmatch guys.
Yeah,
with the deathmatch offense they have, and that was pretty good, pretty cool about this mix of styles here. But in my opinion, the build-up for the final tag and then the payoff we got was pretty short. So it was like two or 3 minutes that Hashimoto and Kamitani really got their stuff in, and then they just got the win after they had been worked over with chairs and all kinds of stuff for the majority of the match. So, still a good match. Still a very good show, so check that out. Check out the BJW Psycho Tag League.
I think they were trying to put over Okami more as like tough guys who could take a lot of
punishment. Yeah.
I agree with you, especially not even that. When Kamatani got that hot tag, there was no high impact offense whatsoever. It was more like he would come in and hit a scoop slam, you know. That's some kind of thing. That didn't really hold up to, especially when, you know, you had the dragon splash and then the big elbow drop from Kobayashi too at one point. So it just wasn't good on that. It wasn't good enough to make a take it to the next level, so to speak. But I will mention that after the match, they got the trophy as well as a big check that said legend on it. So, Okami are legends now, according to this big check.
Was it maybe the sponsor, Be Legend? They sponsor some shows, some promotions.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. But either way, they're legends.
Either way. So, I just mentioned, check out Big Japan, because very soon there is going to be an opportunity to subscribe to their new streaming service. That is going to be named BJW Core, and you can go to bjwcore.com right now. And when you go to the website, you will see that BJW Core officially starts on November 1st, and it's going to be 888 yen. And as I'm looking at it right now, as we tape the show, they have some matches on there for free. For example, last year's Sumo Hall semi-main event with Yuji Okabayashi against Hideyoshi Kamitani. They have a Poseidon Adventure Splash match up there. They also have Kobayashi versus Takahashi up there and some other stuff up there. You can also you can check out the player for free right now. And hopefully Big Japan will put up most of their stuff onto BJW Core, because, man, Dylan, I've been waiting so long to just be able to dive into everything that Big Japan has. And for 888 yen, which is kind of like $7, it's not that much to invest.
8 is my favorite number. That when I played sports, I always wore number 8. That's my lucky number. So 888 means it's a lucky number. Big Japan, one of my favorite companies. Like you, that will definitely be in the rotation of streaming services that we have, because there are so many these days. But Big Japan is definitely high priority when it comes to that. I can't wait to see what all they've been holding out from us in the Big Japan universe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of streaming services, and there are a lot of podcasts here in the MLW universe, so to speak. So, Dylan, why don't we go to Sean Mooney in the MLW Event Center?
Let's do it.
Hey, everybody. It's Sean Mooney in the MLW Event Center, and here's the latest from the MLW universe. Following a controversial victory over Olympian Jeff Cobb earlier this month at MLW One Shot, Tom Lawler called out Matt Riddle, and Riddle has answered the challenge and will face Lawler in the main event for MLW Never Say Never on Thursday night, December 7th in Orlando at Gilt Nightclub. Will Riddle avenge his frequent tag team partner Jeff Cobb's controversial loss to Lawler? Find out at Never Say Never. Tickets are on sale now at MLW.com. Out now on What Happened When, Tony Schiavone and the Alabama Dream, Conrad Thompson, look back at the 1997 Halloween Havoc featuring The Age in the Cage in a classic Eddie Guerrero-Rey Mysterio match. This week on Lucha Talk, the trio talk one of its biggest shows of the year for CMLL with a main event that had Arena Mexico buzzing between Caristico and Volador Jr. The J.J. Dillon Show returns with a brand new episode. That's right, the show's hiatus is no longer. Join the charter member of the Four Horsemen and his co-host, Rich Bikini, as they talk about the good old days each and every Thursday. The MLWVIP.com exclusive MLW Radio Extra takes on your questions from Facebook, including WWE booking plans, the future of MLW championships, and more with MSL and Rich Bikini. Also, catch the all-new Primetime with me, Sean Mooney, as every week I welcome some of the greatest superstars and other personalities in the history of wrestling to the show. This week, the King of Wrestling Podcasts, Bruce Pritchard from Something to Wrestle With, joins me to talk about what it was like when we both lived in the kingdom of the WWF, Stamford, Connecticut, and much more. And don't you wait. Get your tickets now to see Matt Riddle fight Filthy Tom Lawler in a battle of two UFC fighters turned pro wrestlers live at MLW Never Say Never on December 7th. You can buy tickets starting at $15 right now at MLW.com. That's MLW.com. Now it's time to get back to your favorite MLW radio podcast.
Thank you, Sean, as usual. And Dylan, before we took a little break here, we were talking about BJW and BJW Core. And I wanted to mention one more thing, because I missed that before we took the break here. I want to mention that at the November Kurakan Hall show for Big Japan, they have a pretty great lineup set up for that show. So the show is happening a few days after this show here drops. And I don't want to mention the entire undercard, but we have three big title matches, with Shinobu defending the junior heavyweight title against Yuya Aoki, Hideki Suzuki defending the strong world heavyweight title against Hideyoshi Kamitani, and in the main event, a TLC and Alpha deathmatch, Masashi Takeda defending the deathmatch heavyweight title against Minoru Fujita.
I'm so excited for that main event, Stryker. Fujita in the main event is what I can't come to see in BJW. Oh, yeah. But yeah, that should actually be a pretty good show. What do you think of the heavyweight title match? The strong heavyweight title match.
Though? Yeah. They're positioning Hideyoshi Kamitani as kind of in the upper mid-card right now. So I don't really see that Kamitani comes out on top here.
No.
Because, as you just mentioned, he's just not in the right place right now. Especially with his offense. And, you know, Hideyoshi Kamitani really needs to study his Konosuke Takeshita tapes when it comes to how to work on top.
Oh, man. That would be very, very smart idea on his part. But, yeah, it's funny because they tried to really make him more of the MVP of that team with, you know, in the tournament and everything. He got the fall at the end, and he got the hot tag and everything. He's the one that had all, you know, a lot of the torture that he was put through and survived it all. So they had this match in mind, I think, clearly in the tournament to build Kamitani up. But like you said, he's just not that interesting right now. And I think this should be a pretty easy win for Hideki. I don't have any sort of worries that this title reign's coming to an end to Kamitani. But then it'll be interesting to see where they go through there, because I mean, this is the second time he's facing Kamitani. The first match was actually good, and hopefully this will be too. But I wonder where Hideki goes from here if he does win this title match here.
Yeah, I really don't know where they go, but I really can't see another Kamitani title reign. That's the issue here.
Yeah. No, I think Hideki's going to totally win.
Yeah.
I don't want to put any sort of doubt in that. But I do think, kind of like when Miyahara lost his title in All Japan, it felt like there was still a lot of gas left in the tank, even though it went a long time. Here, it seems like it's kind of winding down, almost. Like, they're out of options, and this title reign isn't going to go for much longer, but I do think it lasts at least another month. I think they're working up to, you know, a big title challenge with someone.
Yeah, should at least go through Death Vegas in December.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's going to be a big match, whoever they have planned for that. I think it's going to be a big match, Death Vegas match.
So I was just mentioning Konosuke Takeshita. He is still the KOD Openweight Champion, is the champion of Dramatic Dream Team, and he had a match against Danshoku Dino on October 22nd. That's up on DDT Universe, another streaming service from Japan that you can subscribe to for, I think, 900 yen, also in the range of $8. And in this title reign that Konosuke Takeshita is having, he really became a very, very strong main event wrestler, and especially this match against Danshoku Dino stood out to me because Takeshita was really working like a top player, not doing a lot of stuff in this match, because there was kind of an issue with him that he did too much in recent years, but now he has slowed down. He is connecting with the audience because he is catering to the audience and working for the audience and is looking into the crowd a lot and is moving slowly inside the ring to let the audience understand what he's doing inside the ring. And I really think that DDT has a limitless potential with this guy.
Oh, I totally agree, Striga. And he is a great comparison. That's actually a really great segue from Kamitani, because like Kamitani, his title reign was not well received, his original title reign,
yeah,
where he got it. It felt like he lost a lot. But he's been able to rebound and come back with the second title reign and prove himself not only in the DDT universe, but also just as a Japanese pro wrestler, that he is one of the top talents and a worthy ace for this promotion in an era where we're starting to see new guys, Okada, Miyahara, Nakajima for Noah, they tried. You've got Ashino and Russell One. I think Takeshita is doing an absolutely fantastic job as the head of DDT right now, and I think he's actually kind of underrated because of the streaming service scenario, and that the buzz isn't what it was last year when his title reign kind of wasn't that great. If you haven't got a chance to watch him, I'd really recommend everybody giving DDT a chance and watching some of his matches specifically, because as an ace, he's taken this ball and ran for it and totally blossomed into this role as a young guy. And honestly, I think he's been one of the best wrestlers in Japan, one of the best in the world this year, definitely in the top 20 or so, I would say. worldwide in terms of purely an in-ring performer. And now he's finally got up to where, like you said, he can wrestle as a champion, as well, carry himself as a champion. And I think he's done a great job of that. And even in this match with Dino, who I hate, he really wrestled and did a great job with it. He even had a bodybuilding spot at one point. And Dino really put him over here at the end, the finishing stretch, really put over Takeshita. So overall, I'd say it's a good match. And I'm not someone who likes Dino very much at all. But I even his match last year against Ishikawa, remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think that was a great match. I thought this was a bit better than that match, too.
Yes, it was. And you mentioned DDT in general. And when we discussed talking about this match here, we also talked about the September Kirkenhall show when they had Kudo versus Harashima in a 19-minute match. And I really enjoyed this match, and I know you did as well. And on this show, we just mentioned the October Kirkenhall. There was a very cool match in the mid-card because this DDT special show was basically booked by the fans, so to speak, because DDT every fall they do a general election where the fans can vote the most popular DDT wrestlers, and they structure a card and say we have a tag match with number 14, number 13 teaming against number 12 and number 11. So they put out the spots and then the people vote, and the wrestlers get into the spots that were laid out for them. And they also invited some guests. We had Hideki Suzuki on this card. We had Ultimo Dragon on this card. We had Abdullah Kobayashi. And also, we had the reigning Triple Crown champion, Zuwama, on this card, who had a match with Keisuke Ishii. The match only went 8 minutes, but I really enjoyed this match because Zuwama once again proved that he is so good working with these smaller guys. He was trained by Hiroshi Hase and by Kasayashi, and you can really see that he's able to work with these smaller guys. And of course, Zuwama is also able to work with bigger guys. But here, I really liked him chopping down poor Keisuke Ishii.
Yeah, this was more of an extended squash almost.
Yes,
but Ishii showed so much heart here, even as he was getting totally destroyed by Zuwama.
And he was doing this crazy reverse Pele kick knee combination onto Zuwama's head.
Yeah. To me, Ishii, and I've always thought this, I thought Ishii was like one of my favorite guys for DDT.
Mm-hmm.
Someone that could really blend in All Japan. We saw his All Japan run earlier in the year that he has, so he's someone that's very frequently crosses over. And in DDT, I think he might be one of the better, besides Takeshita, he might be the best pure in-ring performer of DDT. I think he has a great case there, and I think he does a lot. He's never really got the chance to be an ace or anything like that, but whatever he does, whatever he gets a chance to wrestle, whether it be in a competitive matches or even this match where he totally had to put over Suwama, he did a great job with it. And I was very impressed with Ishii and Suwama as well. Suwama's had a really underrated year, I think, overall, because he's not really talked about as much as one of the top performers of Japan. But I think in this year, he's done a lot of great work, including that match against Miyahara we talked about last time. And this was just another feather in his cap. I think he's doing a lot of great stuff right now. And Ishii, to me, whenever he gets a chance, he's gonna rock it. So that's good. One more thing, I will say on Kobayashi, I thought that was Stan Hansen in that opening match.
Yes.
What are you talking about?
I'm sorry. I think I we have it wrong here on Cage Match. I think we have to replace Abdullah Kobayashi with a Stan Hansen. Dylan,
they look nothing alike. How can you confuse them? God.
on that note, Dylan, on November 17th, my birthday actually, and Katsuyori Shibata's birthday as well.
No.
This guy you just mentioned, Stan Kobayashi, he's facing Andre the Giant Panda for a rematch at the Ueno Park in Tokyo. So that's going to be huge.
That will be literally huge.
I think they will draw a sold-out crowd of at least 120,000 people. I'm very certain.
I think so, too. I think that's definitely within reach. I'm going to aim low and just say 110,000.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to be negative.
I'm just trying to be realistic. A disappointment, I think.
I just want to be realistic.
Okay.
That.
I'm sorry. Okay, yeah, Suwama. We talked about him in our last show we did on All Japan. We talked about the match with Miyahara he had, and I guess you can call the match with Miyahara from early October a match of the year candidate, because both guys were leaving it all in the ring and having just a great fight inside the squared circle. And Dylan, transitioning to Yoshi here, I thought that in a very similar fashion, Yokobito and Takumi Iroha also left it all inside the ring and had an incredible 30-minute fight for the Wonder of Stardom Championship on October 17 in Curricon Hall, with Yokobito going in as the Stardom wrestler here and defending the belt against Takumi Iroha, who originally was from the Stardom Dojo, but left in 2015, I think, to join Marvelous, the promotion run by Shigusa Nagayo. And she came back in here, and right from the moment that she walked into Curricon Hall, into this Stardom environment, I thought she looked like a star, instantly. Then she worked the match with Yokobito, and she held Bito down with all kinds of different submission holds, with a sleeper hold, with an arm breaker, with figure four leg lock, and all kinds of different moves. She was trying to hold Bito down. Bito fighting back, and in this match, Dylan, for the first time really, I saw something in Yokobito, and I saw that she may have the potential to be in a headlining position for Stardom, but there is still a long way to go for her. But overall, I thought this was an excellent, excellent 30-minute time limit draw. And what I really liked about this match was in the finishing stretch of the match, they were mostly showing the action from right ringside. And in the final 30 seconds or so, the camera went under the first rope and caught the action as both women were laying inside the ring and couldn't stand up anymore. So both from an inside the ring perspective, from the work the two women did, and also from the perspective of the camera, this was just excellent.
Yeah, I was really impressed with Iroha here, and she's someone that, being in Marvelous, isn't always the most visible promotion, yeah, even among Joshi feds. So we haven't seen her in a while, and I remember liking her a lot when she first started. But I was very happy to see her here, even though this match, it was more like a special match. There was no real lead into it, really, or build, more than just Iroha's back and challenging for the title. Exactly, but I think it was kind of cool. I think it was kind of cool, though, because Bito also came back in similar fashion when she came back last year. So I was impressed by that. To me, Bito, I've always kind of liked Bito, to be honest with you. But she, like you said, her potential as maybe a star might not have been there, but I think she's got a good moveset. And here they used the B driver a lot to set up a lot of big near falls for Bito on Iroha. And I think there was a lot of good stuff here, you know. I think that they did a great job in terms of laying out the match and setting it up to where they worked a long match, like you said, going for the finish, but it never felt like it was boring. It felt like, much like the match I talked about earlier with Nakajima and Keno, this felt like a very organic draw, kind of, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, yes.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Both women worked hard, and they both felt like they wanted to win. It wasn't like they were just stretching out time going for the time limit, you know?
Exactly. No, they weren't stretching out, and exactly that, what you mentioned, they were trying to win the match, and just a great match for Curricon Hall here. Fans really were all out for this match, and and afterwards, Iroha said, apologized for her attitude going into the match, but she said she didn't lose, and so she's training harder to maybe come back stronger. And I think really a win-win situation for both women. As you mentioned, Yokobito as the champion here, and Iroha not that visible in Yoshi circles. So after this match, Io Shirai came out and she had a great promo saying that over the summer she was hospitalized, wasn't able to move, and wasn't able to get inside a ring. And when she was finally back, she wondered if she may be able to tone it down and just be a six-man tag champion, and if that was enough for her. And she was wondering that, and she came to the conclusion, no, she has to have a singles belt. And then she explained it very well, saying the high-speed title is in Mexico right now, the World of Stardom title is in Europe right now, so the highest title around is the Wonder of Stardom belt, and she wants that belt from Yoko Bito. And this challenge was built up early on the show when there was a three-match series between Oedo Tai and Queen's Quest. First match, Chris Wolf beat Asumi in a little under 8 minutes. Then Io Shirai beat Hana Kimura in 12 minutes, 32 seconds. Good match, I thought. But the best match of the series clearly was Kagetsu defeating Hasuki in 11 minutes in a very, very strong match. Hasuki looked extremely great. They had this insane exchange of strikes in that match in 11 minutes. For the finish, Hasuki was trying to go for atomic bombs away, but Kagetsu spit something in her face and was able to get the Oedo Coaster 450 Splash for the win. Also, a very, very good match here.
Man, I love Kagetsu. She's one of my favorite wrestlers on the roster. And, you know, much you were mentioning in the main event, I totally agree with you on Io's promo. She has a very natural story, and I think that's something that's been missing kind of from Stardom in a lot of ways, is kind of natural stories. I talked about it last month when Mayu was still champion. They just had Bito challenge for kind of no reason. And now that Io's got a really, no pun intended, but a great quest for the title here, So against someone that I think really is probably one of their top matches that they could go to right now with the Tony Storm out of the country. I think Bito and Io are kind of carrying the promotion right now in a lot of ways. And even though they're focusing a lot on this Queen Quest versus Oedo Tai series, and Iroha, I just think she would be a great person to sign overall. And I think it's great that they brought her in. I love her style. I love her look. I love her hair. everything about her is just cool.
Exactly.
As far as the Hazuki, As long as the Hazuki and Kagetsu match goes, I thought this was one of like Hazuki's best performances that I've seen. Yeah. And I love the way that she stood up to Kagetsu and really put the hurting on her. She didn't try and go be at work as an underdog. She worked as someone who was the superior performer in her mind. And that set up a great match. So I think that's a great bit of psychology, because a lot of times, even with younger talent, even when they're heels, wrestle more along the lines of underdogs more than someone who has ultra confidence in themselves. And I thought Hazuki totally brought that to the table here. Kagetsu, one of the best workers in ring. And I thought it was a great match. Like you said, definitely the best match of the three match series. You know, and everything was pretty good on that show, that true fight show. I thought they did a good job up and down the card. Even stuff that was kind of wacky, like the Kimura and Io match, there was a lot of stuff going on. Some awkward spots, but the crowd was super into it. The crowd was super into it, and they got the most they could out of that matchup.
Yeah.
And it did. And it served its purpose.
Yeah,
I think everything served a good purpose.
Definitely, for that match, the superplex into the crowd was into the women surrounding the ring was pretty scary.
Yeah, the factions.
Into the factions, right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, very good match here. So definitely check that one out on Stardom World. And another promotion, another Yoshi promotion we wanted to talk about was Sendai Girls, because they also had a big main event that already happened on September 24, I think, for the Sendai Girls Big Show in Niigata. And they again were able to draw a very, very good crowd number for a Yoshi promotion these days, with over 2,000 people coming to see the main event between Sendai Girls world champion Ishihiro Hashimoto and her challenger Meiko Satomura. This show from Sendai, from the Sendai Sun Plaza Hall, an arena that New Japan also runs frequently when they are up in Sendai, was started by a very cool match. I really like these opening matches that Sendai Girls put on, where they have a veteran like Hiroyo Matsumoto in this case, working against a younger talent, in this case, poor Ami Sato, who got bloodied up right as the match started.
Mm. Yeah. These two here, Matsumoto to me has been the Joshi MVP, and you could put her up and down the card wherever you want. And I thought it was perfect to have a little Sato in here. Matsumoto just killed her pretty much because she is the Lady Godzilla. She hit that double knee drop from the middle rope for the win, and it was a lot of fun.
Exactly. Next up, we had a comedy match with Aiga defeating Sakura Hirota. 6 minutes. Defeated her three times, I think, here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The comedy that Aiga does is always pretty fun. She's portrayed to be a ghost, and the people the people she faces don't see her, so that's pretty fun here. And then we had a match with two legends of the sport. Yagua Yotoka teamed with Mio Momono to take on Manami Toyota and Manami. And what stood out to me in this match was Mio Momono, dressed in this pink outfit, tried to stand up to black-dressed Manami Toyota. And Manami Toyota was just laughing her off. Just a fun dynamic between those women here in this match. 14 minutes for this match. Put an emphasis on Mio Momono and on Manami as well. I really like that Yagua Yotoka and Manami Toyota, so late in their careers, are working with these young women here.
Momono has a lot of potential, too. She's mm-hmm. someone very, very talented. I think she's someone to keep your eye on if you are a fan of Joshi or just now getting into it and you want to know who some of the bigger young talent. Manami looked good in this match, too, but especially Momono has a lot of upside. And it's always fun seeing the legends. Yokota and Toyota are two of the all-time greats. I was very happy with that match.
And just like Takumi Iroha, we talked about her the Stardom show, Mio Momono mm-hmm. is also from Marvelous. So Shiguza Nagayo is doing some very good work over there in her promotion. And Mio Momono is only wrestling since February 2016, and she has already come a long way. So keep her in mind. And next up, a match that I enjoyed pretty much because I like Heidi Katrina. She defeated Rin Kadokura in 7 minutes in a good match. I hope that Heidi Katrina stays around with Sendai Girls because I think she fits very well.
Yeah, she got the win here, so I think they're probably going to be looking for a bit of a push with Heidi. She got that diving guillotine drop for the win. So I like this match, too. It was a good match. Katrina's someone that wrestles in all kinds of places, and hopefully she can find more of a home in Sendai here. So I like that match, too. That was a good match.
Next up was a six-man tag match that you specifically wanted to talk about. Aja Kong, Cassandra Miyagi, and Hikaru Shida defeated Asa Maika, Emi Sakura, and Hana Kimura.
Before I get into this, what do you think about the opening here?
What stood out to me was the entrance that Cassandra Miyagi did. when she came to the ring to her entrance theme, and she always acts like this crazy woman, and she was destroying the guardrails, so that was pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, she's got so much charisma, Miyagi does. I said I liken her entrance to a drunken zombie, mm-hmm. kind of. I think that she played it up here. But yeah, it had Miyagi, Hikaru Shida, and Aja Kong on a tag team, which is like the most random team of Joshi people that don't really go together at all. But they made it work here. It was nice to see Emi Sakura, too, in a match, teaming with Hana Kimura and Asa Maika. So I thought it was a good match. I thought everything kind of flowed pretty well. And I thought Asa really stood out to me, too. She had a lot of charisma, too,
mm-hmm.
I thought she stood up well to the explosion that is Miyagi. Charisma. So I thought everybody looked pretty good in that match. And obviously Miyagi won with the tombstone pile driver on Mikey. So,
yes.
So Maika. So it was a good match.
Exactly. And you mentioned Asa Maika, also pretty new still to the wrestling business, I think. She is from Emi Sakura's Gato Move promotion, and she's always traveling around when Emi Sakura is doing her shots in different promotions in Japan. So also here a very good talent. And Dylan, I have to mention it. Semi-main event of that show, Dash Shisako and Kaoru defeated Alex Lee and Mika Shirahime, who came out in matching ring gear to be the tag team of Strong Style Rush. they didn't exactly have a strong style rush in this match because basically for the most part of this 18-minute tag team title match for the vacant Senegal's tag team title, Dash and Kaoru were just relentless on them and just destroying poor Alex Lee and Mika Shirahime to become the new Senegal's tag team champions. The title was held up because, Cassandra Miyagi and Dash Shisako became the champions in July, but Cassandra Miyagi didn't want to be champion anymore. That was it.
Yeah.
So she left the belt in the ring with Dash, and then Kaoru came and said, "Man, I'm teaming with you. Come on, we're going to be the champions." And Alex Lee came to the ring as well, challenged for the belts, and that led to this match. Poor Alex and poor Mika were very unlucky here.
Yeah, Kaoru and Dash were a team prior. I think last year after Dash's sister retired, so
Sachiko retired. Yes.
Yeah, that's true. She's well missed. She was a very strong wrestler, and their team was awesome. But Dash and Kaoru are a good team too. This match was kind of bizarre in terms of how they laid it out. But you know, I was sad. I really liked how Alex Lee looked in this match. And I'm a huge fan of Mika's talent, even though this match wasn't really about that as much. No. And she took the fall, so to let it be shown that Alex did not lose this match.
Yeah, it was kind of a double fall, to be honest.
That's not what the record books say, Stringer. don't try and turn it around on me. Alex did not lose this match, okay?
Okay,
that's all I'm saying.
Okay. All right.
Dash had hit the hormone splash, I'm sure.
While Kaoru was doing the Valkyrie splash, so, yeah.
I didn't see that. I think you're making up stuff. Is that even on video? Why are you lying to the listeners?
Nobody watches
this
match. Go back and watch it again. I'm not spreading rumors or lies here on this show.
But listen, just like Rick the Model Martel once said, it's not what you do, it's how you look doing it. And Alex Lee was A+ on this show. I just want to point that out.
Of course. Okay. Yeah, so the main talking point is, of course, the main event here. Chihiro Hashimoto in her now third reign as the Sendai Girls World Champion. In July, she defeated Hiroyo Matsumoto for the belt, and here in her first defense of the belt, she defeated Meiko Satomura in about 22 minutes. So she was able to overcome her trainer once again. And what I liked about this match, Dylan, was that Chihiro Hashimoto was portrayed to be on a similar level like Meiko Satomura. And that's a very huge step for Chihiro Hashimoto in her young career to be portrayed on the same level as Meiko Satomura, who has been around wrestling for 22 years now. And so I think the fans are really, really taking on to Chihiro Hashimoto as a champion of Sendai Girls.
Yeah, I really like this match too. They had a great match last year too that I think is well worth watching, especially going into this. It'd be interesting to compare and contrast those two matches. And this match here, I think you make it a great point with Chihiro finally looking as an equal to Satomura. And Hashimoto's run has been very helter-skelter in terms of her role as an ace.
Yeah.
Because sometimes she's up there, she's finally arrived, and then she may struggle against someone and suspiciously lose the title or something like that. So it was great to see her finally get this win, get the title defense going. I loved her displays of power that she had here. Her whole style to me is so unique in terms of the Joshi scene that she just rocks it, you know? And even, especially her power bomb that she hit, that thing could, you know, that's up there as one of the top power bombs to me, Chihiro Hashimoto. So everybody should check that out. There's a flipping, like, senton bomb that she did at 1.2 that would look great from Hashimoto. And Satomura looked awesome, as she always does, always one of the top talents. She's been very unselfish, much like Akiyama in All Japan, of taking a step back. But here she got her chance. And I thought they really made a totally awesome main event match that made this show well worth watching. I think everybody should check it out.
Oh, yeah. You know, when I watched the match, I definitely agree with you that Shira Hashimoto's displays of power were very, very, very impressive. They opened the match with an exchange of holds. Shira Hashimoto was going for an ankle hold while Meiko Satomura was working over Hashimoto's arm, and they kind of dropped that mid-match.
Yeah,
and they covered it with these great displays of power, but they never came back to that body part work over again, and there was kind of a missed opportunity, I think, that could have made the match even better if they had picked it up again in the finishing stretch of the match. But nevertheless, the match was great. Meiko Satomura even bursted out the Scorpion Rising, which is huge, because she basically only uses this against high-class opponents, and that tells you that Shio Hashimoto is a high-class opponent.
Oh, absolutely. I love that move. It's one of the best Shiny Wizard variants. It's kind of like a Shiny Wizard into an axe kick to the head. So it's very cool, and it's great to see her busted out against Hashimoto. Hashimoto's style also, she uses a lot of her amateur wrestling background a lot in her matches, and I would love to see them work more of a mat-based style, too. As you mentioned, to go back to that, I think she could totally do that style if they wanted, or just continued what they built off of, like you said, the exchange of holds. But I think what they actually came away with, it might not be as good as their last match, which was an awesome match, but it was still well worth going out of your way watching. And what they did put together was very, very good.
Definitely, definitely. So, go out of your way to see this match. We have it in our cage match match guide right now at 8.56. So a lot of people thought that this match was pretty great as well. Yeah, so I think we covered all bases we wanted to cover, Dylan, or is there anything else you want to mention?
Yeah, just before we get out of here, there is another match I would like to recommend to everyone and kind of check out, and it directly relates to the Joshi scene. And again, we're going to apparently my pet promotion at this point, which is Ice Ribbon. There was a really great match that featured Tsukasa Fujimoto and Arisa Nakajima, the best friends. And they took on someone we just talked about, Mio Momono, and her tag team partner, Maruko Nagasaki.
Oh.
And this was for the International Ribbon tag team titles in the tournament that they were having for the titles to finally, you know, make them not bacon anymore. So there was some really good stuff here, and I think it's something everybody want to check out. I won't go too in-depth into it, but they looked great. There was a very awesome exchange between Arisa and Mio that really showed what we were talking about earlier about how much potential. I think that was a really great tag match, as good as anything we've talked about up to this point. So everybody check out that match from Ice Ribbon, Best Friends versus Maruko Nagasaki and Mio Momono. Great match.
Awesome.
It's from the September 23rd Yokohama Ribbon Show as well.
All right. Yeah, so if you want more of these match recommendations, you can also go, or you can always go to Dylan's Twitter account.
Yep, follow me at DylanZeroSky, and it's a great place to talk with me about all sorts of wrestling. It could be Joshi, New Japan, Lucha Libre, NOAH, any promotion, really. So a lot of good stuff going on there. And I will say one more thing about Ice Ribbon. It's set up in the tournament. There was another match on the show, which was really good, too. It had the Azura Revolution of Maya Yuki and Risa Sarah taking out Team Date of Karen Date and Nori Date. And I thought that was Date's, like, best
My
match.
Favorite stable of all time, the Date girls.
Yeah, so it's really setting up the Azura Revolution taking on the best friends.
Okay.
So coming up, so it should be good stuff. Everybody watch Ice Ribbon; they're a good promotion. And I also want to mention, I got a comment last time that they were very impressed that we got Sean Mooney to say Ice Ribbon on air. So I was very happy with that comment. That's the kind of feedback I love for the show, personally.
Awesome.
Everyone talk to me about everything, and also listen to my other show, Lucha Talk,
yes,
on MLW. We're talking about Lucha on that show. There's all sorts of fun stuff going on right now. Especially the past week, there was a lot of big stuff. Lucha Underground's finale, season 3 finale.
Yeah.
So a lot of cool stuff. And a special show that I'm plugging. Everyone, listen to my show I did for Voices of Wrestling on the Wrestling Omakase podcast, talking more NOAH, because I love NOAH. I think is the final. We talk about the show last month, the big show last month. that was main evented by Mara Fuji and Eddie Edwards, but we really use it to also talk about Noah in the whole year and what people were doing the whole year. So it's a very informational show and a very fun show too. I have a lot of, especially the opening, I would definitely encourage everyone to listen because I talked a lot about weird anime stuff that that nobody probably knows. But I did it to suck up to the host, John, pretty much. So I did my research, people, on that one.
Wow, yeah. So I saw that you had a farewell for poor Dario Cueto, who was killed at the end of Season 3 in Lucha Underground. So check out Lucha Talk. And as I mentioned, if you want match recommendations, you can also go to my Twitter, at Striga, Striga. I will also talk about news of Pro Wrestling in general. I will have these Shibata updates and all kinds of different stuff about pro wrestling in general. And if you want to ask us a question, you can also do that. Send in an email at japan@mlw.com. And from the two of us...
Wait. We cannot go yet. I have something to say.
Okay.
We cannot go yet. I have something to say. Since you brought it up on the Lucha Talk, I've been asked specifically by my co-host on my Lucha Talk show to confront you with this. So that's what I'm doing right now.
Oh my God.
And you gotta answer me this question, Striga, because okay. You're in some hot water right now. Why does Microman not have a profile at cagematch.com? Not .net, brother.
I can't do anything about this. We have a list.
I blame you.
Of about 200 or 300 wrestlers that still don't have a profile at Cage Match right now, and it's a lot of work. And we are working towards it. And eventually, Microman will have a profile at Cage Match, and you will be able to give him a lot of tens.
Okay, you heard it here, people. I just wanted to set the record straight.
I said eventually. I didn't give a schedule.
Thank you. Striga, the clock's ticking, is all I'm saying on Microman. Hey, Gaito has a profile. That's all I'm saying.
I saw that Microman Fever tweeted at me, and I forgot to respond, so I'm sorry for that, but you heard me here.
He was very angry. But yes, he does listen to the show, so I think you've calmed his rage.
Okay.
So we should be good to go. I just wanted to throw that out before we leave.
All right. Okay, I hope we calmed Microman Fever, and this has been the Eastern Lariat for this week. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLWRadio.com network.